Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Gordon Hahn, a senior associate at the Center for Strategic International Studies in Washington, D.C., as well as a senior researcher with the Terrorism Research and Education Program and a visiting professor in the Graduate School of International Policy Studies at the Monterey Institute for International Studies. His books include Russia's Islamic Threat and Russia's Revolution from Above, and he has taught at several universities in the United States and as a Fulbright Scholar at St. Petersburg State University in Russia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gordon Hahn.
Happy New Year, Ian.
Happy New Year to you, Gordon. And of course, New Year is a big deal in Russia. And I guess Vladimir Putin spent his New Year down in Volgograd, the site of two bombings that killed at least 34 people in attacks on a railway station and a trolley bus. And he was seen visiting the wounded in hospitals, and he said, I am certain that we will fiercely and consistently continue the fight against terrorists until their complete annihilation. He's said things like that before, and the terrorists haven't gone away.
No, they haven't, and it's going to be a long, long battle for him, Russia, and many, many other countries battling with this scourge around the world.
So is this Doku Umarov, the Chechen rebel leader, who apparently has moved into Dagestan, which I take it is what's happened to this these Islamic terrorists? Putin, of course, declared a war on Chechnya in the Second Chechen War, provoked by the bombing of apartment buildings in Moscow, about which there's still some suspicion. But he did at the time talk about flushing them down the toilet, did he not?
Right. He spoke about that. And the problem is, of course, that the problem is metastasized thanks to the internet and the ability of jihadists to travel. I'm not sure that Umarov himself has moved to Dagestan. The Caucasus Emirate that he founded in October 2007 in some ways emerged from underneath him. There were jihadis in Dagestan already in the 1990s, and some were emerging in Kabardino-Balkaria. There were radical Islamists who were not sure whether they should begin using violence yet. And that all changed in the early 2000s. And then when Umarov declared the Caucasus Emirate in 2007, he essentially had ready-made cells already in Dagestan and Kabardino-Balkaria ready to join. And so he's built this Caucasus-wide network of jihadists.
But has not this leader, if indeed he's behind this bombing, well, these two bombings in Volgograd, which is 400 miles from Sochi, the site of the upcoming Winter Olympics, Doku Umarov. I think it was back in July that he denounced the Sochi Games as a defilement of the sacred ground of the area's original inhabitants, the Saracens. And he apparently called upon maximum force to prevent the Games from going ahead. Is that what he pronounced?
He called on all the jihadis to attack, either to prevent the games, or I would assume once the games start, to try to attack the games to spoil them. It's true that he addressed the issue of having, you know, not having infidels dancing on the graves of their ancestors. I wouldn't paint too much of the Circassian nationalist issue into that. He may be trying to mobilize Circassians, where one of the nationalities where the Caucasus Emirate hasn't been all that successful in recruiting. They've been recruiting some, but most are now Dagestanis. I mean, the whole thing basically is the only thing that's changing because of the Sochi Olympics is the timing, and maybe there's a little bit motivation and mobilization to attack a specific target. But remember, their overall goal is to create an emirate towards building the worldwide caliphate. And so attacks are going to be carried out anyway. Recruiting is going on all the time. It's just a matter of where and when you're going to use, you know, a suicide bomber that's recruited, or someone who can handle a weapon or deploy a truck bomb or whatever. But the fact that something's going to be deployed, something's going to explode, is just a matter of time.
Well, but Gordon Hahn, it seems, though, and I'm not sure about the figures. I mean, everybody, you know, terrorists and megalomaniacs of all kinds are always vainglorious and claim that they're going to take over the world, et cetera. Right. And you don't know how many people really are following him.
Right.
But apparently that he's had some success in recruiting Russians. Isn't one of the people involved in this these suicide bombings in Volgograd, which was formerly, of course, Stalingrad, wasn't one of them a Russian who was converted to this radical Islam?
This is a long-term trend that began back really probably around 2009, 2010, and it's really being led by the Dagestani Mujahideen more than Umarov. They have been recruiting and deploying ethnic Russian suicide bombers for a couple of years now. If maybe some people would know or recall it, back in on February 14th, 2011, two ethnic Russians, a married couple, blew themselves up in two separate places in the town village of Gubden in Dagestan. The October attack in Volgograd that preceded these two in December was also carried out by an ethnic Russian Mujahideen, a recent convert to Islam. And what appears to be going on is there's a small ethnic Russian Jamaat, or group as they call it, Jamaat, in the North Caucasus attached to a larger Jamaat or sector in Buynaksk, Dagestan. And the emir of that small ethnic Russian Jamaat is a guy by the name of Pavel Pashintsev, and he was the organizer of a suicide bombing that killed the leading Sufi sheikh in Dagestan, Sheikh Effendi Cherkasky, in August 2012. And the female suicide bomber was also a recent ethnic Russian convert to Islam. So this is something that's been going on for a couple of years, and I originally thought that it would be something that could very well be used to attack the Sochi Olympics because, in theory, ethnic Russians would be more likely to be able to penetrate the games than the dark-haired Caucasians that the security forces are usually looking out for.
Again, I'm speaking with Gordon Hahn, a senior associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C., as well as a senior researcher with the Terrorism Research and Education Program and visiting professor in the Graduate School of International Policy Studies at the Monterey Institute for International Studies. His books include Russia's Islamic Threat and Russia's Revolution from Above, and he's taught at several universities in the United States and is a Fulbright scholar at St. Petersburg State University in Russia. So, obviously, it doesn't take too many people. Look at those two hapless Chechens who somehow or other got a political asylum here in the United States and blew up the Boston Marathon. They shut down two cities, these two losers in the United States, a large city for about a week. So it's obviously asymmetrical warfare is such that it doesn't take a lot to cause a lot of damage. So what's your sense then of the idea that I think they're spending $2 billion on security? There really isn't a security fix to this problem, is there?
There really isn't, unfortunately. It's very the Sochi Games may be somewhat of a different animal in that they can close off the area more easily. We're not talking about the entire city of Sochi. Of course, an attack inside the city of Sochi, but not in the Olympic village, per se, would have just as much of an effect. So basically, the security fix is almost impossible. If they really have people who are intent on blowing themselves up, then they should be able to create some kind of an attack somewhere. And in fact, the whole Sochi thing could be some kind of a misdirection, as could the attacks in Volgograd. They may plan to hit Moscow or, say, St. Petersburg, which they've never hit. They've hit Moscow, they've never hit St. Petersburg. So, and that would have the same effect. A major attack in Moscow would scare the dickens out of people in Sochi, and that would put a damper on the games. So there may be some misdirection going on here. An attack in Volgograd, for example, might divert resources being used to protect Sochi to Volgograd, making penetration of Sochi more easy. So we'll have to see if and when and the next attack occurs to decide what kind of diversion may or may not be going on.
But we understand, for example, from jihadis that have attacked the United States and the United States' interests abroad, Bin Laden among them, that they have said that this is about American foreign policy, about the occupation of Muslim lands, which, of course, we obliged Bin Laden by occupying Iraq, and we're in Afghanistan. So I understand, not that I'm in any way sympathetic, but I do understand what the motivation for those that attack the United States is. But I don't understand the motivation for those inside Russia for attacking Russia. What is their beef with Russia?
Well, in both cases, the real motivation actually is not so much what we do. What we do may help the leaders recruit, but the leaders don't really care so much about what we do as about what we are. We're not radical Islamist Muslims, and we're not proper Muslims as they define it. So that's, for example, why they kill other Muslims, because those Muslims are not sufficiently Islamic in their eyes. So the infidel who's not Muslim at all is even worse. So, for example, the attack that I mentioned just a while back, the killing of the Sufi sheikh in Dagestan, has nothing to do with Russian occupation of Chechnya. Obviously, it's in Dagestan. Killing a Sufi sheikh has very little to do with it. Killing a Sufi sheikh is a religious statement about the haram that people, the sacrilege essentially, that people like Sufi sheikhs are engaged in by praying to the graves of Sufi saints and so forth and so on. So this is, the motivation is largely religious. The goals are religious and political. And they say two different things. So, for example, you mentioned that, you know, Al-Qaeda has said that they do this because of American foreign policy. That's what they say to the outside world and to others so that they can recruit and then they can justify themselves in front of others. When they speak amongst themselves and when they publish material on the Internet, almost all of it are religious discussions about the need to establish proper Islam across the globe. So that's the real fundamental motivation, is to create an Islamist caliphate across the globe. But everything else are just secondary goals and explanations and motivations that are secondary.
So, Gordon Hahn, then, given how close Tatarstan is to the heart of Russia compared to Chechnya and Dagestan, mm-hmm. and there's, what, 15, 20 million Muslims in that area of Tatarstan?
Right. More like
five million, okay. So what's the possibility of them becoming radicalized, really, in the heart of Russia? We've only got a minute, I'm sorry.
I don't see Tatarstan unless there's a major meltdown of the Russian state or an extremely harsh policy or an economic crackdown and all those things, a perfect storm. I don't see the development of a widespread underground jihadi movement in Tatarstan. They do have cells that have popped up here and now that have declared their loyalty to Umarov, and they did kill the deputy mufti in Tatarstan a summer ago, and they seriously wounded the chief mufti of Tatarstan. And the guy who was just involved in the Volgograd bombing, the train station bombing, was an ethnic Russian who was in Kazan, Tatarstan, when he got radicalized, though some of the radicalization, at least some of it, occurred on the Internet, which he could have done anywhere. But generally speaking, there's a small trend towards radicalization in Tatarstan, but it shouldn't be overstated. They don't have the tradition of fighting the Russians that the people in the Caucasus have, and they're very moderate in their Islam, and there are a lot of intermarriages between Tatars and Russians, and they're much better integrated into the Russian society and economy. So it should not be a problem, I guess, again, unless you have this perfect storm.
Well, Gordon Hahn, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Gordon Hahn, who's a senior associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C., as well as a senior researcher with the Terrorism Research and Education Program and visiting professor in the Graduate School of International Policy Studies at the Monterey Institute of International Studies. His books include Russia's Islamic Threat and Russia's Revolution from Above, and he has taught at several universities in the United States and as a Fulbright Scholar at St. Petersburg State University. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Disappeared by half.